Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. Now, a few months ago, I talked about the mass killing of Soviet political commissars in the first months of Operation Barbarossa during the invasion of the Soviet Union by Nazi Germany under the infamous Commissar Order, which was given down to the Wehrmacht and the SS to execute any political officers found amongst ordinary Soviet POWs. The fate of ordinary Soviet POWs was pretty bleak anyway. Most of them were dead of starvation within 3 or 4 months due to a deliberate policy of kind of extermination through starvation. But today I'm going to talk again, we're looking at Nicholas Bashman's amazing book, KL, History of the Nazi Camps. And we're looking at the fate of the commissars in Sachsenhausen camp. Most of the commissars were shot where they were found, but some 40,000 were actually taken to the camps. And the regular concentration camp network, which existed slightly separately and preceded the death camps, the Reinhard camps and Auschwitz-Birkenau. These camps had not initially been centres of mass killing. Prisoners, significant numbers of prisoners had died there, but they had not been designed for mass killing. They had not been designed for extermination. It's with the Soviet commissars that they become sites of extermination. 40,000 were murdered, of which 9,000 were murdered at Sachsenhausen. Okay, so Nicholas Bashman writes, "Sometime in August 1941, a group of leading camp SS men came together for a secret meeting in the Sachsenhausen office of Hans Loritz, the long-serving SS commandant. Loritz and some of his men were joined by Inspector Richard Glucks from the nearby IKL and his chief of staff, Arthur Liebenschell, who took minutes. But all eyes were on the special guest of honour, Theodor Eich." For those who listened to the podcast before, we've talked about Eich and his role as the kind of leading henchman of the pre-war camp system, Heinrich Himmler's favourite administrator outside, other than Reinhard Heydrich. As commander of the Death's Head Division, Eich had been involved in heavy fighting during the German attack on the Soviet Union, was wounded in Latvia on the night of July 6 to 7, 1941, when his car hit a mine. Recovering at his villa on the edge of the SS grounds at Oranienburg, Eich made a short trip to Sachsenhausen, where his former subordinates, who idolised him even more now that he was a decorated military commander, welcomed him with open arms. They also knew that he still had a direct line to Himmler. The Reichsführer SS regarded Eich as one of his most faithful friends and met with him twice in the late summer of 1941, just as the killing of Soviet commissars in the KL was getting underway. KL obviously meaning camp lager. Concentration lager, I beg your pardon. In fact, it was probably Himmler who had authorised Eich to initiate the Sachsenhausen SS. So at this meeting in Sachsenhausen, Eich basically announced to the waiting SS dignitaries that there had been a programme announced to murder Soviet POWs. The commissars, when they were taken into the camp, they weren't even registered as prisoners. It was just assumed that they would be dead in a day or two anyway. Eich presented the Third Reich as a kind of a victim of some subhuman enemy, which there had been no choice but to strike back in the most serious of ways. Often the rhetoric of leading Nazis is presented in this way, that whilst standing up for civilization, sometimes barbaric methods had to be employed to counter the barbaric Asiatic horde and all that sort of racist nonsense. Eich said, in retaliation for the shooting of German soldiers in Soviet captivity, the Führer has approved a request by Wehrmacht High Command and agreed to a retaliation action by shooting prisoners, namely commissars and supporters of the Soviet Communist Party. The words were given added weight by the reference to Hitler and by the wounds Eich had sustained on the Eastern Front still visible to all. Of course, these justifications, no doubt there had been German soldiers shot as prisoners on the Russian Front, but these justifications were a nonsense, really. There had been a long-standing plan to murder the political officers of the Red Army. So after Eich introduced what he had to say, the talk then turned to how this would be done. The camp SS leaders discussed various ways of mass killing, trying to really outdo one another with more ingenious proposals. Now, by the time you get to the Wannsee Conference, when Reinhard Heydrich comes to the Wannsee Conference, when essentially the timetable and mechanisms of the Holocaust are decided, he says to and Glucks was there at Wannsee, he says to those assembled, he goes, "Well, I know you guys have been innovating, I know you guys know what to do, and you've already been doing it, you've already been experimenting with gas, you've already been organising things in particular ways, so now I need to take everything that you know and roll it out on a Europe-wide level. The decision's been taken, but I need you, your expertise, in essence." So these moments where you have excited Nazis talking about the most efficient ways of mass killing and how to outdo one another, and they're doing that thing that Ian Kershaw talks about, this working towards the Führer idea of trying their best to appear the most loyal, the most diligent, and in doing so, the most bloodthirsty. These are the kind of, hideous and horrific it is in its own right. It explains how you get to a point of radicalisation of policy by early 1942, when the final solution is given its kind of rubber stamp. In the end, they chose a new method which required the construction of special execution chambers, designated Sachsenhausen block leaders to carry out killings. It seemed that the men were inducted into their tasks that day, following a round of drinks to mark the occasion. The preparation for mass murder in Sachsenhausen quickly began. Supervised by SS men, prisoners from the joinery workshop turned a barn in the so-called industry yard into an execution barrack, using plans supplied by Commandant Loritz. Once it was completed, the SS men made two trial runs, murdering a small number of Soviet prisoners. then the apparatus went into full operation. So here we find the beginnings of a transition towards mechanized mass killing. Mass killing in the field, shooting, is it has its drawbacks for mass murderers. It takes an immense toll on those doing the killing. There is clearly, even in the most brutal of human beings, a still spark of humanity and conscience that torments them when they murder prisoners or civilians. A great many turned to alcoholism, many committed suicide. There are similar stories during Stalin's purges of Stalin's murderers being able to get through a night of killings using large amounts of vodka, and then some going home and taking their own lives after the horror of what they had done. This here we go from battlefield killings or off battlefield prisoner killings towards killings within large mass killings within camps, towards then the mechanisation of that mass killing in order to solve the problem of killing at a required rate. And you start to see how the infrastructure of the final solution is also being laid down at this time. And there, surely in the minds of the likes of Theodor Eich, were this will be useful when we do the Jews. So the first mass transport of Soviet commissars came to Sachsenhausen on August 31st, 1941, from the Hammerstein POW camp. Theodor Eich met with Himmler on that day, and the transport was made up of 400 soldiers, mostly from Belarusia, from the Minsk area, included a large number of Jews. Thousands more Russian soldiers arrived in the coming weeks. The new prisoners were confused and scared, and they were far from home. They were often very young, on enemy soil, and didn't know what would happen to them. Despite how young they were, some were no more than 15. Many looked utterly exhausted and worn out. They were clad in dirty and torn clothes, with trousers held up by string and soiled bandages covering their wounds. Many had rags instead of shoes. Some of the soldiers who had been half-starved by the Nazis, some of the Soviet soldiers, when they arrived at camps like Sachsenhausen, the nearby residents, civilians, saw them, were shocked and appalled at how they had been treated. There is lots of evidence, and Richard J. Evans writes about this in the Third Reich at War, in a brilliant chapter called German Moralities, about how actually there were plenty of German people who, whilst they had no power to influence what was happening, were horrified when they saw transports of Jews or Jews being deported or Soviet soldiers turning up half-starved, and were still, despite the brutalisation of war, capable of compassion and guilt and remorse. There were many more, of course, who just didn't want to know. Richard J. Evans talks about the Holocaust and the other kind of barbarities of the Eastern Front being open secrets, i.e. anyone could know if they wanted to, but most German people didn't wish to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Certain guards saw the state of the Soviet POWs as a justification for what the Germans were doing. So they saw the poverty-stricken and starved and maltreated Soviet soldiers and assumed, well, look, they are kind of subhuman savages. SS officers even took pictures for propaganda purposes, which had been established as a practice in pre-war camps. And few of these were later reprinted in the SS publication The Subhuman, which showed readers caricatures of human faces, nightmares, it says, that have become reality. However, it was the SS who were guilty of savagery and violence and cruelty and inhumanity on an epic scale. The block leaders beat the prisoners and locked them in bare barracks, cutting them off from the rest of the camp by barbed wire to increase their isolation. Often the windows were painted over. After recent arrivals spent a really hideous and oppressive choking time in the isolation barracks, which lasted just a few days, SS block leaders would call them out, usually in small groups, and drive them on trucks to the execution barrack. The execution barrack was shut off from the rest of the camp by a wooden fence. And this was kind of similar to the other actions carried out by the SS. The camp victims had no idea where they were going right until the end. They assumed they were being taken to somewhere better, but the victims went straight to their murders. Inside the barrack was a large room where the SS ordered all prisoners to undress before leading the first man into an adjacent smaller room furnished like a doctor's office. It looked like a small stage set, complete with medical instruments and anatomical charts. Here the SS man, dressed in a white coat, was waiting, posing as a physician. While he pretended to carry out a brief physical examination, he checked whether the prison had any gold fillings. Those who did were marked with a cross, which was also borrowed from the T4 action policy. And then the prisoner was taken next door to in a smaller room, which was resembles a bathroom, with shower heads in the ceiling. The SS man ordered the prisoner to stand with his back against the measuring pole fixed to the wall, and a small gap in the pole allowed another SS man, hidden in an adjoining room, to aim his gun at the prisoner's neck. Once the prisoner was in place, the killer received a signal and pulled the trigger. Judging by the gaping holes in the victim's skulls, the SS used special dum-dum bullets. So once the body was slumped to the floor, another door opened, and the capos from the crematorium commando appeared and dragged the corpse to the makeshift morgue in the barracks' last room. Wearing rubber gloves, they ripped out gold teeth. Any prisoner who showed signs of life was finished off by an SS block leader. Later, the capos threw the corpses into the oven of a mobile crematorium stationed just outside the barrack. Back inside the execution chamber, the perpetrators sprayed the floors and the walls with a hose to wash away the blood, tissue and bone splinters, and the next prisoner was led in. So some of the prisoners obviously were well aware that they were going to die, but many were so oblivious to their fate because of illness and exhaustion, they had perhaps resign themselves to their fate, or perhaps kind of slightly delirious. The SS couldn't keep up the pretense for very long. They soundproofed the killing booth and used a gramophone to play in the background while the other men were waiting. The Sachsenhausen SS quickly became used to this kind of assembly line mass killing until the middle of November 1941, when the operation was suspended because of typhus. Mass shootings took place several times a week. According to a former SS block leader, such actions lasted from early morning until late at night, with a prisoner being shot every 2 or 3 minutes. So that led to about 350 murders a day. The capos worked non-stop. The prisoners who were forced to facilitate this barbarity. The stench of burning bodies spread across the camp and across the local Oranienburg population. There was a lot to talk about behind closed doors when it came to the murders, and there was so much so that some children would approach SS officers in the street asking when the next Russians would be burned. So one evening, Nicholas Foschmann writes, in mid-September 1941, after the murder system had operated for about a fortnight, the Sachsenhausen SS proudly demonstrated it to 2 dozen SS grandees. The visitors were led through the execution barrack and watched as several Soviet POWs were shot and then thrown with great brutality onto heaps, as one of the SS officers later testified. So one of the visitors was Richard Glucks and his staff, who toasted their killing system with alcohol afterwards. Another also was Ernst Gravitz, the SS Reich physician who had long been involved in Nazi mass murder. Most importantly, Theodor Eich once more came to Sachsenhausen after a brief trip from the Eastern Front. Eich addressed Sachsenhausen, the Sachsenhausen SS men, and encouraged them to keep up the good work, in his view. The grateful men sent their hero off with cheers and presents, including 3 cakes and a card addressed to Papa Eich. Before Eich returned to the Russian front, he met with Himmler again, and no doubt brought him up to speed with the pace and scale of the POW murders at Sachsenhausen. All SS leaders knew that Himmler was looking for new methods of mass extermination, and he was looking for innovators. The daily massacres in the occupied Soviet Union, where Jews were lined up and shot in mass graves, had revealed to Himmler that not all Nazi killers could stomach mass murder, and that something had to be done to deal with the burnout of killers. In addition to that, in the summer and autumn of 1941, it was abundantly clear that the original plan for a conquest of the Soviet Union in 6 weeks was not going to be fulfilled, and that the, as Timothy Snyder put it, the fantasies of Hitler crumbled on first contact with reality. The Soviet armies were not in their entirety encircled and destroyed. A hunger plan was not possible, though they gave it a good go. And so the fate of the Jews, which was, in Hitler's eyes, to be something to be settled in much the same way as it transpired after the war. Suddenly that shoots up the agenda. No longer is this going to be done once the Soviet Union has been conquered and once the Western Allies have been defeated, but it must be dealt with during the war. Or new priorities emerge in late 1941, early 1942. The war no longer is a war likely to be a successful war of conquest. Instead, or at least a speedy successful war of conquest, instead it's going to be a long drawn-out affair, and it is Hitler's view that the Jews, the enemy within, must be exterminated during the war. And so the likes of Himmler were looking to please their boss and find the methods with which to do this. And what I had to tell him was of no doubt a great interest. Himmler believed that he could find humane methods of extermination. The kind of gassing appealed to him in a number of ways. Of course, what he meant was humane for the murderers. Gravitz, who had been the Reich physician involved in mass killing, and Theodor Eich, both reported to him that the Sachsenhausen method, which was useful in a number of ways in their eyes, could be more useful than mass shooting. After all, the killers didn't have to look their victims in the eyes when they pulled the trigger, and also they didn't have to look their victims in the eyes when they placed them in a room and used poison gas. Most of the victims went to their deaths without protest or panic. And that in itself is a key feature of the Holocaust, the ability to guide large numbers of civilians through a complex route across Europe in many cases to a destination where they're murdered on arrival and without protest or panic and without forcing their murderers into the position of having to look them in the eyes when they killed them. So, all sorts of interesting kind of aspects of the I think it's what Hans Mommsen calls the jagged road to the Holocaust there. So thanks very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.